This is episode 120 of Social Entrepreneur with Paul Bradley of Rock USA.
At the end of the day, turn what long been an economically disadvantaged group, homeowners on rented land, into an economically advantaged group.
Welcome to the Social Entrepreneur Podcast. My name is Tony Lloyd. I'm a former business executive with Fortune 500 companies. Today, I spend my time with changemakers who are making an impact in the world. Each week, we bring you exciting stories from the world of social entrepreneurs, benefit corporations, and impact investing. Thanks for being with me today. Let's get started. Hi, and welcome to episode 120 of Social Entrepreneur with Paul Bradley of Rock USA. That's R-O-C USA. If you thought maybe we would be playing the song R-O-C-K in the USA, well, okay, maybe next time. So if you listen to episode 119 with Alana Greer, you heard her talk about how some mobile park owners were being displaced because of gentrification in the neighborhood and how they were working to get compensation and to help them through the situation. Well, there are around 50,000 mobile home parks in the United States, and people who live in mobile home parks, they own the home, but they do not own the land. And when you don't own the land, well, you can't control the rent that you have to pay for the lot. And so sometimes the rent can go up very quickly and unexpectedly. Some mobile home park owners, not all, some are not good about maintaining the infrastructure. So things like roads and sewage. And then the other problem with mobile home parks is in the cases such as what Alana was talking about, where there's gentrification that comes into a neighborhood, then a mobile home park can be closed with very little notice. And it's really expensive to move a mobile home to a new location. So as Paul says, people can overnight go from being a homeowner to being homeless. So what ROC USA, Rock USA, does is they help these homeowners to form a cooperative. And Rock USA provides training and they provide finance mechanisms to help them to purchase the land, to finance the land, and then the homeowners become owners in the cooperative. So here he is, Paul Bradley of Rock USA.
Paul Bradley, Rock USA, LLC, and I'm the founding president of Rock USA.
What exactly is Rock USA besides a good song?
We're a national nonprofit in the U.S. and structured as a social venture to make resident ownership of mobile home parks or manufactured home communities viable for low-income homeowners. And so for the international audience and for those not familiar with the country's 50,000 mobile home parks, these are land lease communities where primarily low-income homeowners own a home, but they rent the land beneath it from a commercial owner. And there are 2.7 million of these U.S. homeowners that own their home but rent the land in one of these 50,000 mobile home parks. So we help the homeowners form an association or a cooperative and purchase the land as a group in order to preserve and improve the community long-term.
What led you to this work? What was your path here?
Well, my path started with a real interest in cooperatives through my bachelor's degree at the University of New Hampshire, where I was an economics major and learned about cooperative business types. And it immediately appealed to me because it is, by its business, by its structure, a more broadly distributing form of business ownership, i.e. resources shared more broadly among workers, among members, among consumers of the cooperatives. That really appealed to me. And at the time, I was very interested in international development and spent some time in Central America, but ultimately made my way back to my hometown of Concord, New Hampshire, where I've been professionally engaged for the last 25 years.
So that's interesting. You were thinking you're very interested in development work, but you found a development work opportunity in your own neighborhood.
Yes, exactly. And I became passionate about working with homeowners in mobile home parks very quickly into my work with them. I started in 1988. My first real job, if you will, out of college was with the New Hampshire Community Loan Fund, which was one of the first community development loan funds in the country. That all started in Massachusetts in 1979, and by 1984 had reached Boston and New Hampshire, and has led, largely speaking, to the community development finance field. But be that as it may, I joined the staff of the Community Loan Fund and became a mobile home park organizer in the cooperative mobile home park program. And it really struck me right off the bat. I remember driving home one night, and it all pieced together for me. And I grew up in a mill town called Penacook, New Hampshire, just 6 miles north of my office. And Penacook's a hard-working town. We had a leather tannery, two electric meter factories, a fiber mill for cardboard. And, you know, it was a great place to grow up. I loved it. I didn't realize what some people thought of my town. But one day when I was in high school, I remember overhearing a realtor who said to somebody just out of the corner of my ear, oh, well, you don't want to buy a house in Penacook. You want to look in Concord or Bow or Hopkinton. And I immediately had a reaction to that because, again, you know, hardworking town, hardworking people, and a great place to grow up. And then it really fell into place for me, driving home from a co-op meeting one night, happened to be in Winchester, New Hampshire, which is the seventh poorest town in the state of New Hampshire, and we have 234 towns. But this group of homeowners in a mobile home park that is generally speaking looked down upon by many people, this group of community leaders coming together to not only purchase their community, but to make it a better place and to make it a thriving neighborhood. And I just love that. I committed myself right then to work as hard for them as they're willing to work for themselves. And here I am, still living off that same passion of working with inspiring community leaders close to 30 years later. Really, they're seeing these neighborhoods come together and take on their challenges and really dramatically improve their standing in their communities, but also the economics of their neighborhood. And create more engaged neighborhoods. It's everything that every neighborhood across the country needs. You know, the responsible adults of the neighborhood taking responsibility for the neighborhood. That has to happen neighborhood by neighborhood. And in mobile home parks, the best way to do that is through resident ownership.
I've heard people say the way we make America better is brick by brick, block by block,
yeah.
Right? So it's not something that you do, you wave a big national wand, but it's a neighborhood kind of approach that works. As I was listening to you, I kept thinking about that scene in It's a Wonderful Life with a little savings and loan and Jimmy Stewart saying, you know, well, is it too much to ask that these hardworking people grow up with, two bedrooms and a bath or something, you know? And I hear that echoed in what you're saying here.
Absolutely, because two significant barriers to homeowners that want to buy their mobile home parks and manufactured home communities as co-ops. One is the technical know-how, and two is the access to capital. And time and again, we meet homeowners, and there's a lot of smart people living in communities. That's not the challenge. Obviously, we've got to be good at providing them the resources, you know, and the technical resources they need to go through the process. But they can't for the life of them imagine how they could ever find the financing. And that's what we've been able to do, is by combining technical assistance along with financing, is really make resident ownership viable for low-income community groups. And it takes a lot of self-help. This is not a handout, but it's a very intensive community development strategy that is transforming neighborhood by neighborhood. And then what's really exciting is both local ownership, but within the context of a national network, so that we can scale local problems and create national scale solutions. At the end of the day, turn what long been an economically disadvantaged group, homeowners on rented land, into an economically advantaged group, because there's tremendous opportunities in scaling this.
You mentioned what the problem is. I don't think that we've really been explicit in this conversation. So can you describe what the problem is that you're trying to solve?
If you own a home on leased land or rented land, there are three basic vulnerabilities. One, you don't have any control over the lot rent. So the third-party commercial owner sets the lot rent, and in most states can increase that on 60-day notices, to the market rent. The problem is this is not an efficient market. Once you own a home and have it placed on a lot, your ability to relocate is far less than if you are renting an apartment and the rents go higher. You can simply move across the street to another apartment. Not true when you've just placed your double-wide manufactured home on a lot and it's going to cost you $10,000 to relocate that home if you can find a place for it. So you're somewhat captive, not entirely, but somewhat. And so rents, again, the market's not terribly efficient, so rents can vary greatly, and you can run into a commercial owner that really takes advantage. A, the community improvements. So, you know, I have been in communities where failed septic systems in backyards have been failed for so long that they've created their own wetlands, such that replacing that system can't happen in place because now it's a certified wetland. You know, that happened to be a absentee landlord from New York who owned a community in Northwood, New Hampshire, and simply arrived once a month to collect the rents and then go back to New York. That's not every community owner, but that is, again, a risk and a vulnerability for homeowners. The greatest risk, the third risk, is community closure for change of use. So if you, you know, live in a 100-site community, a 15-acre, 20-acre parcel of land, and it was, you know, rural at one point, it's now suburban, and it's got commercial uses around it. At some point in time, that property can be converted to another land use. The investor, commercial owner, takes the higher value, a higher price by selling it to a hotel, for instance, and the homeowners who've been paying rent on that lot for, in some cases, 10, 20, 30, 40 years, can be displaced with simply, in some cases, a 90-day notice, some states an 18-month notice, in some states with some relocation assistance, in some states with no relocation assistance. And it's the greatest fear of homeowners is the lack of security of land tenure. And it can turn a homeowner into a homeless person.
What is the solution then?
So we help the homeowners form a cooperative, which then allows them to purchase the large parcel of land, that 20-acre, 100-unit community, as a cooperative, which means each homeowner owns one share in the corporate entity or the co-op that owns the land. They have one share, one vote, and they have democratic control of the neighborhood. It is a limited equity cooperative, so buying a share in our model is very, very inexpensive. So everybody has access to membership. Every homeowner is obviously encouraged to buy a share and become an active member of the co-op. That means we have alignment of ownership interests. No longer do we have a homeowner and a separate landowner over whom no one has control. So the homeowners have ownership of their home still, and they did, but now they own 1/100th of the corporation or the co-op that owns the land under their homes, and they can and they are provided a perpetual lease for their lot, and one vote on all corporate matters, which includes, of course, budgeting and bylaws and board of directors and expenditures, etc.
The people who are living in those mobile homes, their equity is not growing prior to this, right? They're actually losing money on this mobile home because it's less valuable over time. When they now own the property, is it typical that they would see some appreciation in value then?
Yeah, excellent question in terms of our desired outcome. First, there is an inverse relationship between the rent that they pay for their lot and their house price. Just like with property taxes, as rents go up, house prices come down. So in fact, getting control of that lot rent and making that rent increase less severe over time is absolutely vital to improving home values. Access to better housing finance is also really critical to house values. This is a housing finance market that has incredibly deep liquidity swings, such that there are points in time in the market when there's not a single lender available to finance the purchase of a home in a community. Imagine if the site-built residential market in the U.S., probably one of the most efficient markets in the world, had a point in time in the market when there was no financing available for people to buy that new residential property. The values would plummet, and yet that is the history of this sector. And in fact, we're in a 16-year liquidity crisis in the manufactured housing sector that kicked off in 2000, and it really has not improved dramatically since that time. So fixing the housing finance sector is really critical component to the question you asked, which is how do you reverse the trend of homes depreciating in value? Control over lot rent, obviously location, 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 and decent quality community, so that people are incentivized to invest in the community, and then a decent housing finance system, so that people have liquidity to acquire homes, and therefore people have the ability to sell their homes at reasonable prices. So our basic strategy is, in fact, to work with communities to help them buy their community. But why it's so important that we're continuing the systems level work or the scaled solutions work is because other elements of this market need to be fixed in order for homeowners to really see better house values. The deepest intervention is in New Hampshire, where we've been operating for 32 years. 27% of the New Hampshire market is now resident-owned, which is quite an accomplishment. There are just about 6,000 homeowners in 119 resident-owned communities in New Hampshire. In 2002, the Community Loan Fund, at the time I was vice president, and under my leadership, we launched a single-family finance program in our communities. And in 2006, prior to the launch of Roth USA, we had a third-party study of the economic outcomes of resident ownership because we had this now two-part economic intervention, right? Resident ownership followed by decent single-family financing, and the results were pretty impressive. We had a 16% price delta, i.e. homes in co-ops or resident-owned communities sold for 16% more per square foot than comparable homes in comparable commercial properties. Rents in those co-ops lagged the market after 3 years, and homes in resident-owned communities were selling faster than those in commercial properties. Days on market was something like 60-some-odd versus 80-some-odd in commercial properties. And on the social side, homeowners in resident-owned communities perceived themselves as more secure, than those in commercial properties. So we were really happy with those results, but my feeling is we could do a lot more. And the long-term vision for this sector, because if you take manufactured home communities back to the basics, what you have are small, affordable homes that can be energy efficient on small lots within dense neighborhoods. And that is a smart land use that delivers detached single-family housing at affordable prices for low and moderate-income families. We need more of that, but it has to be secure, and it has to be has to benefit from some of the same advantages that site-built residential housing does. But that's the long term, and it's all pointing in the right direction at this point.
So you're getting at scaling your impact here. So are you primarily working in New Hampshire? Are you in other places? And what are your scaling plans then?
Excellent. So we launched Roth USA in 2008 to scale the work we had been doing in New Hampshire to other states. So since 2008, through the development of a network of nonprofit organizations, which we certify and train on their, what we call our affiliates, we have 8 nonprofit affiliates operating across the country. Each of them has a staff that is in communities every night and providing pre- and post-purchase technical assistance and training. That is critical. That's the technical information people need to be successful. So we launched in 2008 with a network approach. We also launched with a National Community Development Financial Institution, a CDFI, a community development lender that can provide both pre-purchase as well as acquisition and improvement financing to the co-op. Since our launch in 2008, Rock USA Capital, our CDFI subsidiary, has financed $110 million of purchase financing to 44 resident-owned communities across the country. In total, Rock USA Network now supports 187 resident-owned communities, including those in New Hampshire, but 187 and just over 11,000 homeowners. We're adding, at this point, about 1,000 homeowners per year to the national network, and we've closed transactions in 13 states in addition to New Hampshire since our launch. So, you know, it's a big country. We've got a long way to go, but after 8 years, which our anniversary is in 3 weeks, you know, we've reached 14 states, and our strategic plan is to reach another 3 states within the next 2 years.
Well, 2008 was a very interesting time to jump into housing.
Yes, it was.
You might have 1 or 2 battle scars from that one then, right?
2009 and 2010 were very, very difficult years. In hindsight, of course, had I known the depths of it, we might have kept our gunpowder dry and launched in 2011. Truth be told, we did a lot of work, but we didn't have a lot of outcomes in 2009 and 10. But beginning mid-year 2011, we have just been just growing substantially. Last year, we helped 16 co-ops purchase their communities. And this year, first quarter, we've already assisted 8 communities. The network continues to perform extremely well, and homeowners, you know, one of the big questions early on was whether homeowners in other states would respond as well as homeowners in New Hampshire. And we knew from talking to homeowners, of course, this was a great desire, gaining ownership and control for sure. But, you know, it was a question. And anyways, you know, we passed that proof of concept, and it's very clear when given a viable opportunity to purchase, the homeowners want to purchase it.
Just one quick question. We can't spend too much time on this, but how are you funded then? You've mentioned a few times that you're a nonprofit, but is there a revenue model in here, or how does the money work then?
Excellent question. So we have a substantial cost center, and not yet substantial enough profit center. All of the training and education and scaled services, and you know, our desires run deep, so we would love to do more. But regardless, that is almost entirely a cost center. However, providing commercial financing, you know, March 31st, we closed an $11.5 million transaction in Taunton, Massachusetts, and Rock USA Capital provided all of that financing. And so, you know, on the finance side, we generate revenues. And on the training side, we spend all those revenues. 2015, our earnings ratio was 77%, up from about 65% the year before. And we've had steady progress in our earnings ratio from very early on. So we are on a path to break even. It's taken twice as long as I was first hoping, but that's the basic business model.
As you think about others who might follow your path, so other social entrepreneurs or other people who are change makers, what's 1 or 2 pieces of advice you might have for them?
What's been really fun for me and for a couple of others that were instrumental in developing the the business plan. We've had our business plan adopted by a couple of others in the cooperative development field, and that's really exciting. And really the key element of that is, and what's long retarded cooperative development in the United States, and I suspect worldwide, but now I'm a 100% domestic guy, so I speak to what I know, which is to say, building development systems that connect the training and education, technical assistance, with the financing, allows this generation of revenue on one side to pay for what is in every nonprofit endeavor, the training and education piece, the real community building that's so vital to all of this, is always a cost center. And you can look at cooperative development systems in this country, housing co-ops in Washington, D.C., for instance, and Cambridge, Massachusetts is another example, where there was just no investment in the training infrastructure because the financing and the training was separated. And so, sure, the financing left to its own devices, if you could do it without a training program, a deep training program, then sure, very profitable, and it would attract a lot of people. But where is the development system? So linking these two, so now we're seeing it in worker co-op development over in Maine, where they're linking the financing with the business consulting. We're seeing it with home health care out in the West Coast, where they're doing a similar thing, linking the financing with the technical assistance system. And so I don't know if it's advice for social entrepreneurs, but at least those in the development sectors that we're working with, it's an exciting sort of evolution of the work, and I think could empower a lot more cooperative development, which I think is fundamentally good development.
So if people are looking for Rock USA on the web or on social media, where would they look?
If you're on Facebook, Rock USA, Better Together. Better Together is our tagline. And it's ROC USA. Stands for Resident Owned Communities USA. So rockusa.bettertogether, or on Twitter at rockusa.org, at rocusa.org.
We'll link all that up through the show notes. So a call to action, if there were one thing that you'd love to see listeners of Social Entrepreneur go and do, what would that be?
We have just launched a connection to international awareness campaign for cooperatives. It's called cooperativesforabetterworld.org. But what I'd ask people to do is to go to our Facebook page or Twitter account and to watch the minute and a half video that are the voices and the words of our community leaders as they talk about themselves and what they're accomplishing in their neighborhoods, and concludes with a slide of myrockusa.org, which is the online community center that we've been building, where we do online education for our communities, as well as group purchasing and peer linkage work. But that really is the future. That's how we leverage technology to scale our work, scale community improvements. And so I would really love people to watch that video, share that video, and help us tell the Rock USA story and raise the profile of cooperatives worldwide.
Paul, thanks so much for joining us on Social Entrepreneur.
It is my pleasure, Tony. Thank you so much for reaching out. I really appreciate it.
And thanks to you, the listener, for joining us today. You are the reason that we produce Social Entrepreneur every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. If you'd like the show notes for today, head over to tonyloyd.com/120. That's TonyLoyd.com/120. Well, listen, thanks so much for joining us today. And until next time, please remember to use this one short, amazing life and go make an impact. Thanks. We'll talk to you next time on Social Entrepreneur.